Just want to say another word of thanks to everybody who did something to make this beautiful service happen and for your contributions today. Today I'm going to be brave. I'm going to try to use technology during the sermon. But don't worry if it doesn't work. We have a backup plan, too. When I joined you last December, the very first thing I was called on to do was to preside over a memorial service for the grandmother of a GOOF member. This was a fitting first role for me. After all, I had spent the year prior as a chaplain resident at the hospital where I had witnessed many, many deaths, holding space for families and friends as their loved one died. There was often a strong sense of connection in these moments, and I found myself wondering about the families, friends, and loved ones in the hours, days, and weeks that followed. In fact, one of the reasons I feel drawn to be a minister in a congregation or fellowship, as is the case here, is to be present to these life events and offer support and some measure of continuity along the way. Since I arrived in your midst 11 months ago, we have lost several GOOF members and friends. They're represented on these kites behind me, thanks to Kathleen. They were husbands, wives, book club members, partners, mothers, fathers, friends, grandparents, and even great-grandparents. Given my work as a chaplain and as minister here, this time to remember the dead, to share our grief, means a tremendous amount to me. In fact, I think it's one of the most important services of the year. Today we seek to offer space to one another, to share our memories, to share what we have learned from our ancestors, to be bearers of their spirits, for we are bearers of them, whether we consciously choose to do so or not. That said, I have a small confession to make. When I first heard of Dia de los Muertos as a celebration, a party, I was a little confused. Concerned, even. Grief is part of my daily bread. I have conversations with grieving people on a regular basis. These conversations are sometimes about somebody who died last week, and sometimes the loved one died 10 or even 20 years ago, and it still feels like yesterday to the person. Regardless, sadness seems to be the most prevalent emotion, sometimes regret, sometimes guilt, but not so much celebration. I wasn't quite sure what to make of the festival atmosphere, so I had to dig in and learn a little more. I know many of you here are old hats at this celebration, but journey with me nonetheless. Thankfully, we have a few experts in our midst. Betsy Smith guided me through a couple of conversations and brought me a big green folder of great information about Dia de los Muertos. You probably know this already, but Betsy and Charlie celebrated Dia de los Muertos in Oaxaca, Mexico, several years ago. And she taught her students about the holiday for many years as a Spanish teacher at Travelers Rest High School. Among the gems I discovered was this, and I quote, "Daily life in ancient Mexico was so uncertain and difficult that death was expected at every turn. Death, in fact, was revered, believed to be the ultimate experience of life, life's own reward, even welcomed as a better option when people were struggling for survival. Mexican women and men still view death as a transition of life, a normal stage in the circle of life on earth, a natural progression, not an ending." Writer Octavio Paz commented about his people's relationship with the death, saying, "El Mexicano is familiar with death, jokes about it, caresses it, sleeps with it, and celebrates it. It is one of his favorite playthings and his most steadfast love." Obviously, this is quite a cultural difference from where we live, where we often deny the reality of death as long as we possibly can. And yet this particular day, we are given the opportunity to participate in a cultural celebration that can facilitate our own grieving and our own relationship with death. Part two of my education was watching the film Book of Life, a full-length feature on Dia de los Muertos. You heard a quote from it a few moments ago, read by Dana Coulyard. If you haven't seen the film, I commend it to you. There's even another full-length film about Day of the Dead coming out this spring by Pixar called Coco. Perhaps one of my greatest delights in the research process was a little 3-minute animated film that Maria remembered somehow. After watching it a few times, things really started to click for me. I loved it so much that I wanted to share it with you this morning. Simply too good not to share. As you saw, the festival's underway in town, but the little girl decorating her mother's grave is sad. She has a somber look on her whole body. She's sucked down into the underworld, whether dead or having a celebration, and she's terrified. As she's taken on an adventure by one particular skeleton, she's offered fruit and bread, but she's still scared out of her wits. Then when she's invited to play a game with a piñata, she finally gives in to the celebration and dancing. While she's playing and getting her face painted, she realizes it's her mother who's been with her. They share a tender moment of affection, and the next thing we know, the little girl is back at her mother's grave with flower in her hair. And though she's sad when she discovers where she is, a smile slowly emerges across her face as she walks away from the grave and eventually begins skipping back to the festival. My delight with this animated short isn't so much a vision of the afterlife or some promised reunion with our loved ones. My delight has to do with what I've learned about grief over these last several years and how that's brought to life in this short film. Here's what I've been learning. Once we have our first loss as a child, and we all have many losses at this point in our lives, we are grievers. We never again become non-grieving persons. As grief is not something that we get over or something that goes away, though it does change and evolve over time. While working as a chaplain in the coronary care unit at GHS, where death was an everyday occurrence, sometimes multiple times a day, I began to learn as much as I possibly could about grief. My work with loved ones at that time was very, very early in their grieving process, and after they left the hospital, I never saw them again. That said, I did hope that somehow, some way, I could facilitate their grieving by inviting stories and memories. See, one of the things I learned about grief is that memory matters. Remembering matters. My own example came when my grandfather died. In many ways, I knew him more as a retired man than I knew him as a businessman. Though he loved to travel and seemed to have an insatiable curiosity of the world, I never really thought of him as playful in any way. He was a World War II veteran, after all, and had lived through many difficult times in our world's history on the front lines. In the midst of our gathering as a family after his death, my dad and my uncle started telling stories about Granddaddy at the office. Apparently, any time they made a sale, Granddaddy would go out into the hallway and do a little dance. Then they both got up and started mimicking him. Somehow, some way, this was a very healing story for me. It rounded out my understanding and even my relationship with my grandfather as they shared stories. We need this space to share our stories, our memories about the whole of our loved ones' lives and not just their last days or dying moments. And the truth is, our stories are not always happy ones, and we need space to tell those stories too. Beyond remembering our loved ones, we also go through a process of saying goodbye to the relationship as we knew it and moving towards the future without the deceased person's presence. Rituals play a key part in this remembering. Often a funeral or a memorial service is the first ritual in the process. But one ritual is not enough. Releasing is a very gradual process, and we let go of our dead a little bit at a time. Recently, I had the chance to learn a little bit more about Samhain in conversation with some of our pagan members. Tina and Dana told me about the ritual of setting places at the table for one's ancestors, offering food and drink, and eating in silence, in what is sometimes called the Feast of the Dead. Obviously, there are many ways and many other rituals surrounding death that we could explore. The key is that we do not pretend that the death never happened. How delighted I am to have the chance to begin learning about Dia de los Muertos and hold it in conversation what I've been learning these past years about grief and loss. There's a tremendous amount of resonance, remembering and ritualizing with the help of Dia de los Muertos guides us through the grieving process. We're invited to decorate the graves of our loved ones, to partake in the pan de muertos, We dance with death, play with death, celebrate with death, sing with death, and in so doing, our lives are renewed. We have the chance to reaffirm what anchors us, what values we hold, what ways our loved ones and ancestors have shaped our lives. We find space for grief, and we find space for life, and we realize they are not two separate realities. Over this past year, I've had the chance to hear incredible stories about the dead that we honor in our midst today. Keep telling them. Keep participating in rituals like Dia de los Muertos that help us engage and tangibly express the loss, and in so doing, offer room for renewal. After all, grief isn't about closure. Rather, it's about writing a new chapter and unfolding the grief into our lives.